Welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. This week, we have our weekly check-ins. We have a very special interview with Deanna Kelsch, a gestational surrogate who's going to tell us all about what it's like to carry other people's babies and give birth to them. It's amazing. You'll want to hear it. And then we close with our BFPs and BFNs for the week. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is episode 61. Hello, Shauna.
Hi.
Hello. Do you want to tell us what's happening with you this week and how old your baby is now?
Yeah, she's 7 months and 3 weeks.
Cool.
So we're getting real close to 8 months, which means she's coming into the 8 to 10 month sleep regression.
Uh-oh. Which... No one told me about this one. Come on.
Well, me neither. You know, I always like reverse Google things really, like shit goes down and then I'm like, what is happening? What's going on? And then it's like, you Google and go down, and you're like, oh, it's an 8 month sleep regression. So it's been a little bit rough with her. I mean, and also she's just got so much going on. You know, she's just learned to crawl. She's totally obsessed with standing. I mean, I had to lower her mattress in her crib because she was standing in her crib and like I was worried she was going to tip over the edge of it.
Oh yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah, so she's obsessed with that, which I think messes with her sleep. She's definitely teething. I think you mentioned last week or the week before, like it was obvious when your baby's teeth mm-hmm. were actually about to come in.
You spend months being like, I think they're teething. And then like when they're actually teething, you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally predicted that my baby would have a hard time with teething because she's just so loud and expressive.
No, yeah.
Anyway, so I was like, oh, teething is going to be an interesting time for us. And so that's gotten just really ramped up with the drool and the crankiness and all of that. And on top of all of that, she has her first cold, which I know your baby also had recently.
Yeah.
Yep, so there's that. And also, in my reverse engineering of what's going on in my life, she is in her next leap.
Ah, shit.
Yeah, Cece. So there's that.
She's just like, I'm going to check box A, box B, box C, box D.
Just all of them. And she's checked them with vigor. Yeah, so I'm just a little bit exhausted. And the sleep regression is really just, I think, her dealing with all that. And it's hard to rest. It's hard to sleep. It's hard to nap. Either she's just too wired or she's extra sleepy during the day and will nap a ton. And then we'll have trouble at night and wake up a lot at night and stuff like that and wake up early in the morning. So
wait, what does that mean, waking up a lot?
Well, it's not necessarily that she wakes up and is awake, but it's her thing of being very disrupted in sleeping and like, you know, screaming at night and then the monitor pops on and it wakes us up. Steve does a lot of the monitor work, so it, you know, really wakes him up. And so several times she's waking up early, as I mentioned, and she's really screaming and crying a lot while going to sleep.
Oh,
so I think she's really... Yeah, she's really unsettled when I put her down, to the point that there was a discussion in my mom's group. Someone said, will my baby ever not cry when I put her down to sleep? And I was like, I had that exact same question. I wondered the literal exact same thing because I put her down, I can give her all this comfort, and she's like, and I lay her down, and she just cries. She just cries for like 5 minutes, and then she's putting herself to sleep. So I am starting to wonder, is that just her style or are we going to get past that? Like, this is just a tough phase.
I'm sure by the time she's 18 or 19, it'll be just fine.
I hope so, or else her college roommate's in for a big surprise.
Why does Cece cry herself to sleep every night?
But she wakes up all happy the next day. It's just like, that girl's got a weird personality.
And then she wakes up at 5:30 and she's all smiles.
With a poopy diaper.
Oh,
I love Cece so much. I love her so much, obviously. But yeah, she's struggling right now. And like I mentioned, we're weaning.
Poor thing. Poor you, too.
Yeah, we're weaning breastfeeding. So I've dropped another feed. And every time I drop a feed, I kind of go on a little emotional roller coaster because I think hormones are starting to change. So I'll have a couple days of tough, just emotional stuff or fatigue. And I'm hanging in there, though.
Oh, man. Well, it's such a tease when you have a period of time of good sleep and then it gets interrupted again.
Like, mm-hmm. I can't, right now, my baby is sleeping so well for the most part, and I'm just like, I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to go away, Shauna.
I know.
My life, I was just talking with Corey, like, last night, and, like, before we went to bed, about how different our life is now that he sleeps through the night. It's, like, a huge change, you know? It's just, like, a huge benefit, and I don't know. But, you know, they do what they do. I know that my mommy and me teacher, she calls them the cognitive leaps, not the sleep regressions. And she does say they're always tied to learning new skills. So the, you know, the optimistic way to look at it is like she's learning so much. Mm-hmm. That's why she's needing to wake up and yelp.
Yes. And I can definitely see that correlation. Like I said, the girl is absolutely obsessed with standing. When I put her in the bathtub, she does not care about any of the toys I put in there. Mm. All she wants to do is stand on the edge of the tub and then plop her butt in the water and hear it splash and stand and plop and so stand and plop. I know, it's so
little
cute.
Baby butt.
And the other good thing is I really, and I know this from raising my first daughter, that they really are phases. It's tough right now, but I know that it's all going to work out and she's going to get used to standing and she's going to break those teeth. And it's going to go back to normal. And same with you. If and when your boy goes through stuff, it'll work itself out and it will go back to how nice it is now.
That's good to know. That's good to know. So I actually had a question about standing in the crib. Are you still putting her in sleep sacks? Like, how does she manage to stand up in the sleep sack?
Yeah, we do. It's very roomy at the bottom. There's a ton of extra space by her feet. And sometimes she'll, like, take a couple steps and it'll get pulled taut a little bit, but they do make these sleep sacks with little feet holes at the bottom that we used to use with Elle once she started standing and walking around the crib more. So she could still have like the blanket feel, but also have her feet free so she could be more mobile. So we'll probably break those out from the hand-me-downs soon. And
I didn't know those even existed.
Yeah, footed sleep sacks.
Interesting.
There you go.
All right. You learn something new every day. There's a product for freaking everything. I know.
There truly is. There truly is. Anyway, that's us this week. What about you guys?
So my baby is 29 weeks, which means he's 6 months and 3 weeks. So we had a pretty big week. We went on our first plane ride this week. Two planes, actually, because we went up to Portland to visit my stepdad and my mom. And he did great.
Yay!
It was awesome. So Portland, the flight to Portland is about 2 hours from LA, and we flew out of Burbank, which is, if anyone knows the LA area, Burbank is on the north side of the Los Angeles basin, and it's a very small, adorable airport. It used to be called the Bob Hope Airport, but now they've changed the name to the Burbank Hollywood Airport, I think, because they think it's like more attractive to visitors. I don't know.
This generation is like, who the hell is Bob Hope? That
I know,
means nothing
I know,
to them,
I know.
I guess. Yeah, but it's the best airport.
But the Burbank Airport really is the best. It's small and easy to navigate, as opposed to LAX, which is like a fucking nightmare. Like, I wouldn't wish LAX on my worst enemy. We have to do it sometimes, but it is really awful. So thankfully, we flew out of Burbank, so it was super easy. And I bought a bunch of, like, new toys for the baby, thinking he would need distraction on the plane. Turns out he didn't. He's just such a outgoing little baby that he wants to just see what's going on in the world. So he was just jazzed by being in like a new environment.
Aww, cute.
Yeah. And he's better. Like, his illness has gotten better. I was worried about his ears, you know? So like, I nursed him for like about an hour, basically.
Oh my gosh.
Well, takeoff and landing, I nursed him. So, you know.
Not an hour straight.
It was about a half hour straight. So it was like, you know, it wasn't not. I mean, it was an hour, a net hour on my nipple. So he's actually very gentle. Like, there have been lots of times where, you know, his napping, you know, as I've discussed, has historically not been great. So I would just like boob him to sleep and he would stay latched for like an hour and a half. And it wasn't like fun, but it wasn't super painful or anything. So I learned like a few tips from people who've done this before, cobbled together from friends and internet advice. And so one of the things I learned was, in addition to nursing on the way up and down, and that's like to help their ears regulating, is to wear a soft wrap. So like I used a Moby wrap, which is what I have, but any like soft wrap that doesn't have metal and buckles and stuff, wear them through security, because then you can just like have your hands free and walk through the metal detector with the baby. So that was huge. That was really great. So we got through security. Thankfully, we have pre-check too, so that made a big difference.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, so it was pretty darn easy. And then the other thing I did was I left the Moby on for when we were on the plane, and it acted as sort of like a, you know, it acted as a sling, so I didn't have to be holding him the whole time. So he wasn't like completely strapped into the Moby, like the full shebang. But when I was nursing him, I kind of like put one of the diagonal paths of the fabric across his body and used it just as a sling so that my arms weren't like having to be engaged the whole time.
Mm-hmm. I also felt so like you can do that internet surfing on your
phone. I think it was Alaska. They didn't have internet, so it was it was fine. I played Candy Crush. So
there you go.
And he napped. He fell asleep nursing and then woke up and played and was flirting with all the people around us and like the people in the seat behind us. He just kept like making eyes at them. And yeah, it was totally fine. So we got to Portland. He was totally fine. We got to my stepdad's house and he started in the afternoon acting really fussy. And I was like wondering whether it was just he was tired or what, but he was acting like he was in pain. And we were trying, like, we gave him some ibuprofen and he was still acting like he was in pain and we didn't really know what to do. And at some point, my mom was like worried about his ears. You know, she was like, oh no, is he getting an ear infection or is it like his ears haven't regulated? And I was like, well, he didn't have any problems on the way up or down in the plane. You think that he would be fine now? But then my mom like gently, sounds really gross, she like gently sucked on his ear canal, like the opening. She said she didn't make a seal. She just like kind of like loosely put her lips like over his ear canal and like gently sucked in. And instantly he got happier. And so she thinks that, you know, his eardrum was a little, you know, concave or whatever from the plane, like it hadn't quite regulated and it was irritating him. And she was able to just sort of, you know how if you're on a plane and your ears aren't regulating, you can like pinch your nose and blow.
Yeah.
That's the Valsalva maneuver, if anyone's really curious about the Valsalva
maneuver.
Knew. Yeah. So I think she was just kind of replicating that, but externally. So I don't know. It was weird. It worked instantly. So.
Wow, that is amazing. And do you think that's something that we could do on our own babies, or is that like a pediatrician move?
I mean, it was definitely a pediatrician move. Like, I wouldn't have had the balls to do that. And I think she made sure to tell me she did not form a seal, because I think you could probably hurt them if you like formed a seal and sucked too hard. But she just lightly like next to his ear. I don't know. Maybe he just thought that was funny and it, you know, like snapped him out of his mood. But I don't know. But
well,
anyway,
that's good that she fixed the problem. That's awesome.
And the trip to Portland, it was fun. It was pretty, we didn't really do all that much. We went out to dinner one night with my mom babysitting. And one really great thing is he actually slept really well in the travel crib.
Oh,
I was shocked because my stepdad's house doesn't have AC and it was hot in Portland. It was like 90 degrees, which, you know, when you have AC is fine, but when you don't, it's hot.
That sounds and miserable.
The room wasn't like fully light sealed, like our, you know, hermetically sealed rooms.
Okay, that would just gives me anxiety just thinking about this sleep situation.
There was a ton of light leaking in. There was, it was hot. So we got like a fan running that wasn't like pointed straight at him. We got it as dark as possible. Oh, this was a good one. So not to throw Corey under the bus, but I was nursing him in the morning when we were leaving for the flight. And Corey was like going through the checklist of all the stuff we needed to bring. And then we get to Portland and he pulls out the like video part of the monitor. And I was like, where's the camera? And he's like, I thought you brought the camera. I'm like, why? No, you didn't. You're just trying to cover your ass. So, so anyway, I sent him to Target to get another video monitor. So we, because, you know, we tried to set up something with like an iPad and an app and it just did not work. So,
yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, the first nap was rough. I had to hold him. But then that evening, I thought like he's never going to sleep. I put him down. He cried for like 5 minutes and he passed out and did not wake up till 6 a.m.
Wow. So, that's awesome. I think that we get so worried about how the kids are going to do with, you know, the change and everything being different. And most of the time, I think it's we are the ones that are more anxious. Both of my kids have turned out to be pretty great, knock on wood, whenever we travel or do anything adventurous or out of the ordinary. They really roll with the flow. That's kind of impressive. Sounds like your guys the same.
Well, I mean, if this trip is any indication, it's great. You know, I'm really happy because, I mean, it could just be that he's at a great age to travel, you know, that he's not walking, he's not really crawling, so he's easily wrangled, you know, but I don't know. It was a great trip, and it's really encouraging to know that it's not going to be a complete fucking nightmare to travel with a baby. Like, it is possible to have a fun trip with the baby.
Yeah. And even when Elle got a little bit older and she was more mobile and toddling, she loved the airplane so much. It was just so thrilling. You know, kids just love that stuff. And it was all new and exciting. And I'm sure it'll be the same way with your guy, too. So you'll probably be able to take many trips with him.
Hope so.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Should we wrap it up? Because we have an awesome interview coming up in our special segment.
So I'm so excited.
Yes. I can't wait. So let's just take a quick break and we'll be back with this super awesome interview.
Let's do it.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids, but you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why StoryWorth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give StoryWorth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted StoryWorth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP.
So we're back, and we're very excited today for a very special interview. We have with us Deanna Kelsch. Deanna, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You are a surrogate, correct?
Correct.
Wow, that's so cool. And we have a lot of questions for you, so thank you. Thank you for being here. I guess my first question is, how did you get into this line of service or work or whatever you call it?
So I've always been interested in pregnancy and all things related to childbirth. And even as, you know, a kid and a teenager, I just thought the topic was really interesting. I used to watch documentaries about it. And so I'd heard of the concept of surrogacy probably at a pretty young age and just thought it was a really neat thing. It wasn't until after my oldest child was born that I thought, yep, I could do this. I could do this for somebody else. I knew looking at my baby that she was mine, and I knew that I could be able to care and love for the baby belonging to someone else and not feel like it was my own. And I felt really empowered by the birth process. I felt wonderful while pregnant. And so after she was born, that was in 2007, I just started looking into it. I started kind of going down the rabbit hole of Google and reading everything I could and kind of soaking it up. And so she nursed until she was about 18 months old. And that's a requirement that you do need to be totally done nursing before starting the process. Mm-hmm. So I read all about it in those 18 months. And then when she finally decided to wean, that's when I kind of dove in and started my first surrogacy journey.
That is so cool. So you say first surrogacy journey. Have you done this more than once?
I have. I have actually worked with two different families, two babies for each family. So the first family that I worked with, I carried their two boys, and they are 9 and 7 now, which
wow.
is just wild to me.
Wow. So,
yeah, it's super cool. So after their second child was born, my husband and I decided to add another one to our family. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of an interesting sort of topic as well, because one of the requirements, you know, kind of a general guideline, I should say, for surrogates is that they are done completely with their own family. So I had only had one child when I started going into surrogacy, and my husband and I had talked about it, and we decided that we fully understood all of the risks associated with pregnancy and that there was a possibility that I could lose my fertility, as there's always that risk in any pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that we were totally comfortable if we only had one child. And if something happened, we were at peace with that. But after I had two surrogacies, we decided we did want to try for another one of our own. Mm-hmm. So we did. And then when he was about a year and a half, I decided to was going to do one last surrogacy journey.
Oh, wow.
Met a new family that, you know, we fell in love with, and we are now pregnant with the second baby for them.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Two families, four babies.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you're currently pregnant.
I am. It's actually pretty new. We're only about 10 weeks, but we are just over the moon about it.
Oh, congratulations to you all.
That's so amazing. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I need to knock on some wood. I have very easy pregnancies. I don't experience morning sickness. I don't get that first trimester tiredness.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
Wow.
I just feel like if I am capable of doing this, then I just should, because it truly doesn't interfere with my life very much. I mean,
That's
I say
amazing.
That and you know, there's always surrogacy. It does have an added level of extra steps that a pregnancy for your own family doesn't have. But that being said, pregnancy is generally pretty easy for me. So I really feel like if I am capable of doing this, I absolutely should.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I think both Shauna and I had I don't know if we had extreme – we definitely didn't have extremely difficult pregnancies. But
no.
We did have – I mean, I had a lot of nausea. I was really tired. Mm-hmm. I also should say that, you know, we were older. I imagine you have to be on the younger side to be a surrogate. Is that right? Especially if you're going to do it more than once.
Between the ages of 21 and 39 is the general guideline.
Oh,
I'm 35
wow.
now. Mm-hmm. Because with gestational surrogacy, it is not your own eggs that you're using. You have a little longer shelf life with your fertility
yeah.
in terms of surrogacy. So, you know, your uterus is generally healthier for longer than, say, your eggs would be. So mm-hmm. even though I'm 35, my pregnancy is not being treated as a, you know, advanced maternal age or high risk pregnancy because the egg.
Geriatric.
Exactly.
Our favorite term.
the egg is younger, so we don't have to worry about that.
That's good. So how do you get paired with the families?
That's a great question. So I did match with both families through an agency, but that's not a requirement. You can match independently, so to speak, and a lot of people find each other through Facebook groups, or there's a lot of kind of online resources where you can find each other. There are some big ticket items that are important that you agree upon, and generally you want to get those out of the way, because if you don't see eye to eye on the big ticket items, then it's just not going to be a match. So things would include: how many embryos are you willing to transfer? How many babies are you willing to carry?
Mm.
And this is not always a black and white kind of answer, because with the first family, they were using her eggs. She was 39 at the time. They had three embryos. They were all considered fairly poor quality.
Oh,
it
wow.
was the recommendation mm-hmm. of their fertility doctor to transfer all three. I was new to surrogacy. I was 25. I was young. I didn't understand fully with transferring three embryos what that could mean. Mm-hmm. I certainly did not want to carry triplets.
Yeah,
as a general rule, now I say you transfer as many as you are willing to carry. Now, the doctor did talk to me and say, there is basically no chance of you carrying triplets. She was going to be happy if one took, and she was not all that optimistic that even one would take, and we were pregnant with one.
Wow.
So it did work out. So how many embryos you're willing to transfer and carry is important to agree upon for matching. Also, things like your views on termination. If there was a severe abnormality, a chromosome abnormality, if the baby would not likely survive birth, if your mm-hmm. own health was at risk. Mm-hmm. So all of these different things come into play, and no one wants to think about facing that situation, but it's important that you talk about it. And most of the time, you just want to be able to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. Explore, you know, what would happen if we continued with this pregnancy? What does that mean for both the surrogate carrying it and the baby after delivery, and all the realities that come with any particular diagnosis? So you do need to have those tough conversations and be on the same page about those, and then hope that you don't ever have to deal with it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Is that sort of thing, do you have a contract?
You do. Absolutely. The contracts are generally at least 30 pages long. They cover a lot.
Wow.
And that is absolutely addressed in there. For me personally, I am absolutely okay with the intended parents having the final say with whether the pregnancy will continue. That being said, if I, for whatever reason, had decided that I was not okay ending a pregnancy, the doctor would go with what I was saying, even if I was not the legal guardian of the child, because I am their patient, and the patient always has the final say. Of course, I've been lucky enough to never have to deal with those situations, but I do agree to terminate if that's what the parents decide, because to me, I view it as this pregnancy is their experience, including, you know, how the delivery goes. I'm a vessel, and I hope to be respected throughout it, but I want it to be their experience. I've had my experience with my children, and this one should be theirs to me.
That's so fascinating to me. My question is really, are there requirements for becoming a surrogate? Like, you said there was between 25 and 39, but do you have to go through physical testing, psychological testing? Is there any sort of standards?
Absolutely, all of the above. So the American Society of Reproductive Medicine set guidelines. However, it is ultimately up to each particular fertility doctor what they will allow. So general guidelines being between 21 and 39, general guideline being no more than 2 C-sections when you begin a surrogacy journey, not being on depression or anxiety medications for at least 6 months prior to beginning, and not having a history of drug use or abuse. Also, there is a BMI requirement of 30 and below. So there's quite a few things. Now, pregnancy is not government regulated, and that is why ultimately each doctor can make their own call. They also prefer no more than 5 deliveries, I should say, when you begin a surrogacy journey. But there are some doctors who will approve someone who's delivered 7 or 8 babies already. So the guidelines can be interpreted how each doctor would like. If you, as a surrogate, are going to apply through an agency, then each agency may have their own guidelines that they might be more lenient about or more strict about. And there is psychological evaluation as well. There's generally a test that you take on the computer, kind of a personality type of test, as well as an in-person or over-the-phone interview talking about, you know, your life, your childhood, your past, and kind of what brings you to surrogacy.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Coming back to the family, something I'm curious about is, like, what kind of relationship do you develop with the families through this process?
It becomes very close, very quick, at least in my experience. Now, the nice thing is there is so much to do, so to speak, before the actual pregnant part, that generally you have months to get to know each other. And there really is a big to-do list of things to get out of the way when you first match and you're kind of going through all those big ticket items to make sure that you agree upon them. One of them being communication and your relationship, because of course, sometimes intended parents are afraid that they're going to bug their surrogate or be intrusive. They don't want to text or call too frequently, or, you know, to, you know, make her feel like they're invading her privacy. And at the same time, a lot of surrogates are like, oh, I just want to talk to them more. I just want to involve them more. So talking about what kind of relationship expectations you have during the pregnancy as well as after the baby is born is something that's really important to talk about during matching. But there is so much to do in the beginning in terms of you're doing the, you know, the medical evaluations. So you're past records are reviewed, you are seen at their clinic with the doctor that they're already working with, and they make sure that they approve you as a surrogate. Now, insurance is another big thing to get out of the way. Even if you have insurance, a lot of policies have a surrogacy exclusion, and they make it about as clear as mud. Something like the language, anyone who is not covered under this policy will not be covered as a surrogate. And it's all very wordy and confusing. Many policies kind of saying, oh, look, I have a surrogacy exclusion. But what they really mean is if it's my policy cannot pay for me to have somebody else be my surrogate, since they are not named under this policy. But me, I am named under this policy, so I am covered. But they make it very confusing. So it has to, you have to have a very thorough insurance review. And if it's deemed that it will not cover the pregnancy, you have to find a policy that will. There's just a lot to do to get ready. And of course, all the medications leading up to the embryo transfer. But during that time, you're really working as a team. It is such a team effort to make them parents. And it's such a goal to become pregnant with their baby, to see this through. It's really such a team with the surrogate, the surrogate's family, the intended parents, all of the doctors and all of the team at the clinic, the attorneys. It just spreads so far with all of the people involved in this one goal that you all just are working together. And it's a really great feeling, a really great relationship. And it really helps in the this is their baby mentality.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Very different from your own pregnancy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I imagine that also sort of psychologically helps prepare you for this is not my baby. You know,
absolutely.
It's not just like one day you give birth and you hand it over.
Absolutely.
The process.
It's such a process and it's so different. And before I matched the first time, you know, nobody really knows how will I handle this once it's a reality? How will I feel emotionally? And, you know, I knew that I could do it. I had no fears of, you know, finding myself saying I'm going to keep the baby. It was nothing like that. But I didn't truly know how I would feel until I was in the position. And so when I was matching, it was important to me to find a couple that was close, you know, geographically, that they could see me frequently, that they could come to appointments frequently, that it could just be, you know, over and over in my mind, this is their baby. So they lived about 2 hours away and we did see each other quite frequently. And what I found very quickly was that it wasn't necessary at all, especially when, you know, we can talk so easily through video chat or, you know, texting and it's everyone is so connected regardless of how far away they are, that I learned very quickly that they could have been in another country and it would have been fine with me. But you wonder how you're going to feel emotionally, and all of the prep helps immensely.
I have a question, which is a little bit of a probably a taboo subject. I don't know. Maybe not. But I know that for me, like, you could not pay me enough to go through pregnancy. You know, I'm thinking about having a second kid and I'm like dreading the pregnancy part. Like, I want the baby, but the pregnancy part, oh, it's like, I don't know if I want to do that again. So how do finances work with this? Because obviously it has to be worth not just, you know, you're sacrificing your body and your time.
Absolutely. I can say without a doubt that without the compensation, I would not be here. I absolutely would do it for a very close friend or family member without compensation. But for someone I did not know yet, I wouldn't. And this is coming from someone who says that pregnancy is pretty easy. So, and yet still, because of all of that prep work, I mean, that's about a good 6 months, you know, kind of give or take. And at that point, you're not really bringing any compensation in, but there is a lot of time and energy and other things that are going into making the process work. It's definitely, you know, it weighs on your family, not so much in a negative way, but it is there that, you know, you can't do XYZ because you're pregnant. You know, we're not going to be going out of town for Christmas because I'll be about 28 weeks then. So there's just, you know, there's things to consider that the impact is more than just myself. It impacts my family as well. So finances are another thing that, you know, you've got to get that out of the way during the matching phase. And because you do have so many kind of taboo conversations, that helps your relationship too, because you just have to kind of get it out of the way. You've got to figure out how to talk about these things together. You do want to agree upon these things in the beginning, so there's no tension later on. Having an agency does help in this regard, because if there's any kind of, you know, taboo subject that you might want to bring up, you have someone to kind of be a buffer and help with that. I've been really lucky with my matches that we've been able to talk to each other directly, and, you know, we're just kind of good at communicating with each other to make sure that no one's uncomfortable, and we can sort of talk about business, so to speak, and then, you know, move on to all the mushy-gushy stuff. But generally, the funds are held in an escrow account, just so there's no question that it's there and available, and it's dispersed via your contract. So if you are supposed to get XYZ amount at so many weeks, you know, that the escrow account is aware of everything that's detailed in your contract, and they send a check at that time. And a lot of times it needs to be approved by the intended parents before they send the check. So I'm sure there are, you know, horror stories out there when an intended parent has not approved a payment that the surrogate is entitled to. But honestly, I think that is the exception, not the norm. Most intended parents are just so incredibly grateful to their surrogate, and they wish they could offer more if they could. I've been very lucky that everything has gone smoothly.
That's wonderful. You mentioned your family and kind of the, not burden, but the energy it takes, you know, to be a surrogate with your family. Can you talk about just in general, like what your friends and family think about you doing this?
Absolutely. And it is so important to have their support, particularly if you have a spouse, you know, or even a partner, they've got to be on board, because it will definitely impact their life as well. During the beginning stages, you know, you have to abstain because you do not want to become pregnant with your own pregnancy.
Oh, right.
Well, in preparation for a surrogacy. So there's a lot to consider there. With my children, you know, I have to remind them, well, no, we're not going to plan this Disney trip because I can't be going on some roller coasters right now. So little things like that. Wow. Now, compensation does help. It really does, because if I do feel, and this is probably going to happen more so as the pregnancy progresses for me, but, you know, when you're 7, 8, 9 months pregnant and you're just feeling exhausted and you're too tired to cook, you have some extra funds there to order some food you need to.
Yes.
So that definitely does help. But really, I get a lot of questions about young children and how to explain this to them, and if it's confusing for them, and are they going to bond with the baby? But ultimately, you're not preparing them for a sibling. You're not talking about names. You're not buying any baby items. You're not making plans for a nursery. You're not doing anything to prepare for a new member of your family. So a lot of times, I think the kids kind of forget. The only thing that changes for them really is their mom's body changes. And do they notice that? Maybe, maybe not. You know, I get them involved by letting them develop a relationship with the intended parents as well, because that's really where the bond lies. It's not really with the baby that you don't know. It's it's with the parents. That's really where the bond is.
Mm-hmm. And how old are your kids now?
My daughter is almost 12 and my son is 5.
Oh, okay.
Do you continue your relationships with the families after? So you had two surrogacies with one family, and now you're on another one where you're on your second pregnancy, right? With a separate
Correct.
Family. Yeah. So do you continue your relationships after? Like, do you see pictures? Do you want to see pictures? How does that work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, that's addressed in the contract as well.
Oh, interesting.
It is, yeah. So in my contract with both families, it states that, you know, they will continue to send periodic updates or pictures And we've kind of organically developed really close friendships with both families. So, I expect these to be lifelong relationships. Now, since working with the first family, we have moved several states since then. So they, at the time, were about 2 hours away, and now they're basically a country away. So recently I was in their state and, you know, met up with their mom for dinner, and we had a great time, and it's really lovely. So yes, I see them when we FaceTime. I still know them, and it's really great. It's great to see them. Although I did forget about one of their birthdays this month, so I feel bad about that.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the experience is like giving birth to a child for someone else, like that moment or that like time in the hospital or anything you can share with us about that experience?
It is the best moment. It's the best moment. It's really all of that prep work, that all of that team effort. We all have this one goal in mind, and it is that moment. And it's incredible. It's unlike my own births, it's so different, and it's so amazing to see their faces when they're with their baby for the first time. And there's just nothing beats it. It's incredible. It's really, really incredible. And with the most recent birth that I had, so that was the older brother of the one I'm pregnant with now, it was really wonderful. The hospital was great. They gave the mom a hospital gown to wear, and they brought in an extra delivery bed for her.
Oh, wow.
And so the plan was for her to catch her baby and then have skin to skin with him right away on her own delivery bed. And so the baby comes out and she catches him, and then she turns and takes a step, and the entire room of nurses and the doctor and I all scream because he was still attached.
Oh, no.
Yet. So we all scream, stop, wait.
Oh, no.
And,
oh, my gosh.
And then we all laughed. And then they cut the cord and let her go have skin to skin. That was pretty hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
She was like, oops. Really
oops. So eager to get that baby. That is beautiful, though. I'm just, like, shedding tears here quietly because it just sounds so moving. Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing. And then, you know, toward the end of pregnancy, I always kind of joke, all right, this is it. I'm not doing this again. And then that moment happens, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to do this again.
Oh, wonderful.
So when you are like starting to feel labor pains, like, have you had to like rush to the hospital? Like, has there been time for the families? It sounds like with that one, obviously the mom had time to get there, but like, what's the actual like timeline like that with that work? Cause it's not like you're on a schedule, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny how many times, you know, the intended parents ask, so when do you think it'll happen? I don't know. And they ask the doctors the same thing. And they're like, if only we had a crystal ball. But I know with the first family that I worked with their second child, we had already moved. So we weren't super close anymore geographically. So they were on their way, but they were still about 7 hours away, and I was telling them, you know, I wasn't in labor, but I was already 40 weeks and maybe one day or 2 days. And I was saying, you guys need to be in town like now. Mm-hmm. And so sure enough, they got in town, you know, whatever day it was, and went into labor that night. And by the time that I had called them, when I knew like, okay, it's go time, and he was born less than 2 hours later. So,
oh my gosh. Wow.
Like, no, good thing we came when we did.
Yes.
And with the most recent one, my water had broken first, but I didn't go into labor right away. So luckily they did have time to kind of get their ducks in a row and make it. So I think generally, you know, usually you're not super close geographically. So generally they do try and come a little bit earlier and just kind of hang out and wait. And then you're just a ticking time bomb at that point. And then you always right. feel, you know, really hesitant to call and text because, you know, every time you do, they're going to think this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, just saying hi.
You got to have like a special word.
Yeah, exactly.
Word. Yeah. Wow. So, Deanna, what do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about surrogacy?
You know, most of the time I get a really positive response, but there are probably two main things that I hear if it's not super positive. One of them being, oh, I could never give my baby away, to which I kind of think, gee, me neither. And,
right.
You know, and it's not my baby. And, you know, and I love adoption, which kind of leads me to the next thing, which is a lot of people jump to, well, why don't they just adopt? Mm-hmm. And that one, it really kind of, that one I find really upsetting because most of the time when people say that, they've never adopted. And when a woman announces her pregnancy, she, and I don't mean a surrogate, but any woman, she is generally given lots of congratulations, lots of celebration, and nobody questions, why didn't you adopt? And I really feel like it is not the responsibility of the infertile people of the world to save all of the children. Adoption is beautiful and wonderful. And my best friend, who also agrees she could never be paid enough to do surrogacy, adopted her children because she wanted to avoid pregnancy at all costs. And I'm a huge advocate for adoption. But there are lots of ways to create a family. No one way is better or worse or right for all people. And it's such a hurtful comment to make that I think people don't think it through. And most of the time, the ones who said it have never adopted. So,
sure, yeah.
You know, so that one feels really big. And a lot of times, once intended parents have turned to surrogacy, they've already been through a very long road. And they probably considered adoption at some point. I'm sure it's not like whoever is saying this comment to me, like they were the first ones to think about it.
Right.
But, oh, no, adoption. That's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Never heard of it. Never heard of it. So they've usually been through so many treatments themselves. They've poured so much of their hearts and their money into creating these embryos, and they want to give them a chance. They have these embryos available. They've been created. They've taken so much of their resources to create them. They already love them. They already view them as their children. All they need is a safe place to grow. And usually it is at that point they realize, for whatever reason, it can't be the mother herself, and they need somebody else's help. And so that's usually, I think, one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, a woman might want a surrogate because she doesn't want stretch marks, or that it was just kind of a willy-nilly, I don't want to be pregnant myself, so I'll get someone else to do it. And there's usually a lot of hurt and pain that comes prior to, you know, the wonderful goal ending that we're all hoping for.
So when is your due date with your
It is one? March 17th, which is such a lucky day.
Oh.
Lucky leprechaun.
Oh, yeah.
St. Patty's Day. Woohoo.
Oh, that's so exciting.
That's so exciting. That's really wonderful.
Oh, I'm so happy that's working out. And I think, Shauna, we have a question we ask all of our guests, don't we?
Yeah, let's ask Deanna.
Deanna, so we ask all of our guests if they have a big fat positive, a BFP that they can share with us. Do you have a BFP you'd like to share with our listeners?
I do. You know, talking about the conversation that you have with children about surrogacy, there are wonderful children's books available. And there are some that are available for the children of the surrogate and even for children born from a surrogate. So one is called Grown in Another Garden. And this is geared toward young children who were born from a surrogate. And it just kind of goes through this really lovely story explaining that some of the most beautiful creations are grown in another garden. And the other one is that I really love is called My Mom is a Surrogate. And it has, you know, young siblings, a brother and a sister that kind of they see it through their eyes, how their mother is becoming a surrogate to help another family. And I just think that children's books are such a wonderful way to open the conversation. They have the visuals of the pictures and just kind of reaffirm that, you know, this is a really beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to help another family, and it's a beautiful thing to come from the help of another family. And I think that, you know, it can kind of just reaffirm and answer any questions that the kids might have and really explain it in a way that they can understand.
Those sound wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
And we'll be sure to put links to that on our website, bigfatpositivepodcast.com. And Deanna, it's been so great talking to you. I feel like I could talk to you for another hour.
Yeah.
It's a big topic. There are so many questions.
And we'd still have stuff to talk about. Yeah.
Well, you certainly answered a lot of them. And thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time. It was wonderful.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you so much. So should we take a break, Shauna? And then we'll come back with our BFPs and BFNs and wrap up the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor. And I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important. And therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the ringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's best sellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. And we're back. So we close every episode with a big fat positive or a big fat negative, a BFP or a BFN. Shauna, what do you have for us?
A BFP.
Yay.
Yay. So as y'all know, we're weaning breastfeeding, and that means more formula in our life.
Yes.
And a product that I came to know when I had my first daughter, because we stopped breastfeeding at 6 months, so I had 6 months of full-on formula making, was the Dr. Brown's formula mixing pitcher.
Pitcher?
It's a pitcher.
Gotta describe this. I cannot visualize. I mean, I know what a pitcher looks like, but I...
Yeah, so it's a pitcher, and it's probably, I guess the max is maybe like 36 ounces, although I don't ever make that much. But you can make a full day's worth of formula, which for us right now is maybe like 20 to 24 ounces of formula. I can make it all at once instead of having to shake up bottles every single time I feed her and making them throughout the day. It really saves time, really. And
how long is formula good for once you've mixed it?
24 hours in the fridge.
Oh, okay.
1 hour at room temp.
Got it. So it's kind of like breast milk. I mean, I guess in the fridge, breast milk is 4 days, right?
I think, yeah, four to five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so you have to be prepared to use it for the next day, but you can make a full day's worth all in one shot. So you put all the water in, you put the formula powder in. And one thing I don't like about making formula bottles and like shaking them up is it gets really foamy, like lots of bubbles. And if you don't have the right kind of bottle, it can get extra air in their system. And so this bottle's so cool. I don't even know how to explain this. So it's got this pump and it's attached to like this spinny wheel at the bottom. It's like a wheel kind of like the size of the circumference of the pitcher, and you just pump it up and down, and this little wheel goes through the formula and gently mixes all the formula together. And within like 15 pumps, you've got a full pitcher of formula, and you don't have to mix all your bottles and measure each one and everything.
So, like sort of like a salad spinner type pump thing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, good analogy.
Okay, cool. That does sound cool.
Yeah, so I find that really convenient, and that's my BFP for the week.
That's awesome. Yeah. I, you know, we haven't had to use any formula yet, so I don't know anything about, like, the formula world. I do know I've seen friends, you know, with, like, the pre-filled, you know, pre-portioned out powders, and, you know, I watch them and mommy and me, like, dumping it in and measuring the water and shaking it, and it does look like that's a little bit of a pain, so...
Though, it is cool, but I will say if you're on the go, you do want to do that method, because unless you want to bring ice packs and everything and keep the formula chilled, because it's only good for an hour at room temperature, it's just best to bring – I always bring pre-measured water, pre-measured formula in a separate container, pre-measured powder. And when she's ready to have a bottle out in the world, I mix them together at that moment and make it and give it to
her. Got it. There. That makes sense. Yeah.
So there you have it. What about you? What you got for us?
I also have a BFP.
Woohoo.
This is related to my travel, which I talked about in my check-in. So it is a car seat bag that's also a backpack for travel. So it's like a case for your car seat that's padded. And then it has straps so you can, like, carry it on your back when you're getting ready to, like, go check it, right? But the reason this is my, like, it doesn't seem that amazing, right? Like, whatever, you put your car seat in a case, great, okay, sure. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. But the thing about the car seat backpack is that you can put the base in with it as well. But also there's a lot of, like, negative space inside of a car seat. And in that negative space, you can stuff extra diapers, extra birth cloths, extra clothes.
Thinking.
And the airlines let you check a car seat for free. So it's like checking a bag for free. You can fit so much stuff in that backpack. I will say on the way back, there was like a salty gate agent who asked me like, there's just a car seat in that in the back, right? And I was like, yep.
You straight up lied?
I totally lied.
I couldn't do it. Oh, it makes my stomach hurt thinking about it.
You know, it's so funny because I hate lying and I hate breaking the rules. But when it comes to like getting charged for checking bags, it's the one place where I'm like so self-righteous. I'm like,
I should not be paying for this. Like, I know I should not be paying for this. You've charged me for so many years to check bags. I'm going to get away with it this time. I'm going to bring all my baby shit in the, it's like the one I used is called the JL Childress Ultimate Backpack Padded Car Seat Travel Bag. The list price it says is $52, but on Amazon right now it's $39.99. So it's, you know, it's really very sturdy. But yeah, I was like, you're not going to check in there and you're not going to like go back and charge me if you do end up opening it and seeing a bunch of diapers and crap. So
yeah.
So yes, I condone lying in this situation. Gosh, I hope no gate agents are listening to this podcast.
I think they're our top audience listeners.
But also, I like it mainly because it is this backpack, because I realized we would have been screwed if we didn't have it, because we weren't able to really carry, like, you carry the baby, you're pushing the stroller, which we ended up gate checking. We checked the car seat, like, before you go through security. Mm-hmm. But you have so much crap when you're going on a trip, and just being able to put it on your back and not have to worry about it. It's gigantic. Like, if you imagine walking around with your car seat on your back, it was a lot. But, you know, it did take it off out of your hands. So highly recommend. We'll, of course, post it. We'll post links to both of these on BigFatPositivePodcast.com so everyone can see them. You can always check out our favorites page as well if you go to BigFatPositivePodcast.com/favorites. We actually have a list of all the products that we like have talked about on shows that we love, so you can just like quickly find them, so you don't have to go to our episode page. So that's a hot tip. Mm-hmm. Our favorites page. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that. And also, if you love the show, please rate and review us on whatever platform you listen and spread the word as you've been doing. We appreciate it so much. If you know a pregnant mom or a mom-to-be or a dad-to-be, I don't know, maybe dads want to get in on this action. Who knows?
Yeah, dads.
Why not? Spread the word. And if you want to get in on the conversation, let us know your BFPs, BFNs. Please reach out. We love hearing from you. Laura, where can everyone reach us?
We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at BFP Podcast. And we also have a Facebook community group. Just search for Big Fat Positive Community and click to join. I will add you. It's a closed group. So that way we keep all of our conversations just between us. So just click request to join and I will add you as soon as possible.
Big Fat Positive is produced by Shauna Maiko, Laura Bierick, and Steve Yeager.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye. I don't even know how to explain this. It's got a pump on the lid.
Okay.
And it's got, maybe I should just see how they describe it so I don't have to use my dumb words.
You only have a few degrees in using dumb words.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, fuck it. I don't know.